This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is this the tiger? The neutral zone.
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
What's up, friends? It's time for another edition of The Neutral Zone. I was even so excited I beat the music going down a little bit today. Welcome to The Neutral Zone. It's another Friday, and it's a historic day if you look at Canadian men's soccer and the CONCACAF world. But I won't spoil it completely because there's a headline coming up. So we'll get to that in just one second. Joining us is Josh Watson. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing well, Brock. It is Friday afternoon. It's been a busy day and I have no plans for the weekend. So it's going to be nice to just sit back and relax.
Love that. I love no planned weekends. But, you know, those are the weekends where like someone will come up, will text you or call you and be like, you know what? I'm going to come into town because or whatever to visit you because you're not busy. And so that's when you have to have the, is it more about the relaxing or do I need to actually do something this weekend? So at least that's what I always find.
Yeah. Knowing my friends, the texts are probably going to start pouring in now. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see.
Also joining us is Claire Buchanan. Claire, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I am kind of in the same boat, still buzzing from last weekend at the Canadian Blind Hockey Tournament. But yeah, I have a pretty relaxed weekend ahead of me. My Fridays are always my busiest days of the week, but it's a day I look forward to.
Yes, I think it's a day we all look forward to be honest with you. Let's get into something we look forward to on the show every week, and that's our headlines.
For the first time in 36 years, the Canadian men's soccer team has qualified for a World Cup berth. They finished atop the CONCACAF table and they will compete at the next World Cup in Qatar in December of this year. Now, me being the age that I am, this is a first time for me in my lifetime. My other co-hosts might not be able to say that, but this is a first for a big generation here. And we are excited to see what Canada can do in just a few months.
I think I just got called old, but that's okay. This week, the hockey world mourned the loss of Ottawa Senators owner Eugene Melnyk. Mr. Melnyk passed away Monday evening after a long battle with an undisclosed illness. It has been a sad week in Ottawa. There's a lot of questions, and we are going to touch on a lot of them in a later segment today. So I will reserve some comments until that time.
Yes. Rest in peace, Mr. Melnyk. You will be missed. And Claire, I got to say, I also fit in that demographic of being the first time seeing a Canadian team qualify for a World Cup. So that's cool. Congratulations goes out to Team Canada for winning a bronze medal at the World Championships in Prince George. Now, follow up with Brad Gushue, who will be taking his team to Viva Las Vegas. And we, again, congratulate Carrie Anderson and her team for winning the third back-to-back Scotties and representing Canada well at the World Championships.
Tiger Woods is at Augusta National to play a practice round to get a sense of whether he can play in the Masters or not. Anticipation that Woods will play the course, where he is a five-time champion, has reached a fever pitch, with even his private jet being tracked from its departure in Florida to now its landing in Georgia.
Canadian entrepreneur Sanjay Malavia has stepped up to give a donation of $1.2 million to the Paralympians and Olympians who received medals at the Tokyo Games and the Beijing Games. For Olympians, the money they will receive will be in addition to the money already given by the Canadian Olympic Committee. In contrast, this will be the first time that Paralympic athletes will receive any monetary reward four medals they have won. I, for one, think this is about time. It's been way, way too long since this disparity has been dealt with. So I'm glad to see it happening. I am a little concerned that a private donor had to step up in order for this to happen, but a step is still a step.
Couldn't agree with you more. I could add a little bit, which I might do in a bit on the program, but I'll just say that I believe that this is kind of a weird thing that the Olympians also get money in addition to what they've already received. I think if we're looking at equality, this may not be equality because you're still putting in the Olympians a step ahead of everybody else. But I digress. Those are your headlines for this week. Let's take a look at our Twitter poll questions. How did you take in this year's trade deadline? 40% of you said television, 33% of you said social media, and 27% of you said not at all. So interesting results there for sure. How many Canadian teams do you think will make the playoffs is this week's question. Your choices are 2, 3, 4, or 5, and you can cast your votes at our Twitter handles, which will be given out in a bit on the program. Coming up next, we're all going to assemble around the table and discuss what we've been up to this past weekend. We were all involved in one parasport or another, and Cam Jenkins slides in next to join the conversation. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. We'll be back.
There are 5 ways to get in touch with The Neutral Zone on Twitter. Number 1, at AMI Audio. Number 2, at Neutral Zone BR. Number 3, at Neutral Zone CB. Number 4, at Neutral Zone Cam J. And number 5, at JWatson200. Now get out there and tweet one for the Gipper.
Welcome back to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, alongside Josh Watson and Claire Buchanan. And as I mentioned before the break, we're also going to welcome in Cam Jenkins to the program. Cameron, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing, Brock?
Pretty well, pretty well. Would you like to throw any shade about the old comment before we jump into this segment?
You know, I would say that I'm the most experienced person on this panel. I don't like to call myself old, but I'll say experienced. And yeah, like Claire, why are you throwing shade like that? That hurts, like to the bottom of my core.
Hey, that's what you bring to the table, that wisdom and experience like you just touched on.
No, absolutely. But you called it old. And yeah, I don't know. It just kind of rubs me the wrong way, but I digress.
That's fair. As I mentioned on the break, and I'll let the listeners in on this, I'm the only one balding on the panel. So, you know, that's fine. I'm the youngest and balding. So that's just the way it works here on The Neutral Zone. Josh said he hides it well for him, but there's no hiding it for me.
Well, if you had to put up with all of us, Brock, I'd be balding as well. So it's all good.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, let's jump into our first topic of the day, and that is that we were all part of various things this weekend. Claire and Josh were part of the Ontario Sledge Hockey Association's Champions Day weekend, and Cameron and I were part of the Canadian Blind Hockey Championship for the first time in what felt like forever, because we haven't done it since the pandemic, and much could probably be the same about the para ice hockey event. But let's start with the para ice hockey event. Claire, how would you say, how did the day become designed as Champions Day? And kind of give us a look at the format and the way it works.
The format laid out over 2 days. It was Saturday and Sunday, and you played your semifinal games on Saturday. I guess depending on what division you were in, the division that I was in, the A division, we only had three or four teams in the division all year. So we went straight into a semifinal game on Saturday against London, and then our gold medal game on Sunday. And over the years, they've gone back and forth with whether having a bronze medal game or not. This year they did go with holding one, but they have gone back and forth of whether to hold a bronze medal game or not. I like the fact that they do still hold it. It definitely gives the athletes another chance to play another game. And at the end of the day, we just want to play more hockey. So I'm glad they brought that back. And yeah, it was a blast of a weekend. The team that I'm on consists of guys that I've played ever since I started the game, and the likes of Carl Ludwig and Anthony Gale, and just a great group of not just athletes, but just great human beings that I just love playing hockey with.
Yeah, no, they are. It is a great group there for sure. And Anthony Gale made his return to para ice hockey not that long ago. From what I recall, he was part of the national program for a number of years. Carl is a medal winner at the Paralympic Games as well. Josh, I want to take your question in a bit of a different spin, because your division was kind of up in the air in regards to who you would play, how it would cross over. And I know some of it's a little murky on how it worked out, but if you could just share with us kind of what initially was supposed to happen and then what ultimately happened with your division, that would be awesome.
Sure. I play in what's known as the open division, which basically is a non-contact division. It's designed more for recreational athletes, athletes that just want to go out and play a fun game of hockey and maybe not be as competitive, not as violent as some of the divisions can be. The way that the weekend was structured was, as Claire mentioned, a semifinal game on Saturday, followed by a gold or a bronze medal game on Sunday. And so initially, when we went into the weekend, the way that the league had distributed the open division was basically geographically. So you had teams from the West and Southwest playing against one another. So that would be teams like London, Elgin, Windsor Essex, and others. And then you would have teams that were more Eastern. So that would be Cruisers Red Dogs. That would be Kawartha Blazers. That would be the Northumberland Predators and the Ottawa Senators sledge hockey team. No affiliation with the NHL club, as far as I'm aware. We got into the weekend and played our first game against Northumberland, and the team played absolutely phenomenal hockey, and we were able to come away with a 5-0 victory, which was amazing, against the team from Northumberland. The way that the league had been structured, that should have put us against a team from Ottawa to decide the champion of our pool, so to speak. However, after our game, a number of the coaches from the other teams in our division came to our coach, who also is part of the Ontario Sledge Hockey Association Board of Directors, and asked, you know, could we do it so that the best team in the South and West goes against the best team in the East? And then the other two teams that they played can go against one another. So that would mean that instead of playing the Ottawa Senators, my team would end up playing a team called the Elgin Imperials out of St. Thomas, Ontario. I don't know how that worked out, but it ended up being a much, much more competitive game and much more enjoyable for us. And so we ended up, as I said, playing Elgin, and we ended up unfortunately losing that game, but it was a 5-3 hockey game. And the teams from the higher seed, so to speak, Ottawa and Windsor, ended up playing a game which ended 4-3. And I believe that one went into overtime, to be honest. I'm not 100% sure, but it was very, very tight. And so when the league made that change, it made it a much more enjoyable and much more competitive weekend for everyone.
Yeah, it sounds really, really good. And I just kind of love the fact that, you know, the league got together and said, how can we make this more competitive for all involved? And if I may take a conversation and put it public on the air that you and I had, you said to me, I truly believe that the result probably would have been the exact same had we played Ottawa, except the score would have been far more lopsided. And so having a more competitive game to all around, and even Ottawa having a more competitive game, is just something I really like. So kudos to everyone involved. And my guy Josh, ladies and gentlemen, had a bunch of shutouts this year, and just like it was so good. And so congratulations on what was a great season for you and silver medal, and all well there.
Thank you.
And Miss Claire, let's talk about your two games. Start with the semifinal and give us a rundown of the towards the final.
Absolutely. See, we had a different situation. It's with the A division, it's been hard over the last few years. They've also had this idea of whether or not current Paralympic athletes should be able to be a part of regular season games. At the Cruisers Cup, first tournament of the year, they do open it up to have current national team players play on the teams that they would normally represent. So we usually get to have the likes of Billy Bridges and Dom on our team. And but in this year, they haven't had the Paralympic athletes involved in the tournament, which makes sense. They were over in Beijing, so that would have just been a lot of scheduling on their part. But aside from that, that mixes up the A and B division and kind of brings it to a lopsided event, where our semifinal was against London, the London Blizzards. And usually up until now, they've played either in the C division or the B division. And our semifinal game ended up being very lopsided. And it brought into an idea that's that I'm really curious about right now, is we were up quite a bit coming into even the second period. We were up, I think, 12 nothing. And it's, they didn't switch to run time. And it's because of OSHA rules that no matter what, at OSHA Champions Day, there's stop time no matter what. And I think that just puts lopsided games like that. It's not fun for the other team. It's not fun for us. We want the game to go as quickly and as smoothly and as competitively as anyone. But when you run into those kind of uneven games, it's just not as fun for either team, no matter what. And so we ended up winning that one pretty easily. And then I think London ended up going home with the bronze medal. But we ended up playing Elmvale, one of our more competitive teams in the league. They usually, when the Paralympic guys are there, they usually have the likes of Tyler McGregor, arguably one of the best players in the world right now. And he makes a huge difference, just him being on the ice. And we always have fun playing those guys. And because of COVID, we haven't been able to play Buffalo either this year. This is my first time in the A division getting to Champions Day, and not having teams like Buffalo in it, really, it sucked, because it is one of the teams that we are more competitive with, and it just makes the division that much more evenly matched. And so hopefully they're back next year and we can cross the border. But we went into the gold medal game, and it was a blast. Ended up being 5-2 in the final. And we ended up bringing home the Cruisers another medal, and it being a gold one.
Fantastic. Sounds like you guys had some good success, and really happy about that. I kind of agree with you. I think that especially on a 12-0 game, it should be runtime. My sort of initial thought would be, when you hit double digits, that's when it should be you know, running the time. In my opinion, but it's something that I think they need to look at and moving forward. Go ahead, Josh.
I had a chance to see Claire play on Sunday afternoon, and that was a phenomenal game. It was very well played. It was very competitive. You could see I don't want to call it animosity, but there's definitely a little bit of hate between you two. So that was a lot of fun. And I'm sure it has nothing to do with a certain player for Elmvale that used to be a Cruiser, so it was a lot of fun to watch.
Rivalries? What are you talking about? Rivalries? Who has rivalries?
There's no rivalries in hockey.
Never.
Never. Not ever.
But I've also been on the end of those 12-0 games, and you're right. They're not fun for the team that's winning. They're not fun for the team that's losing. It's just, it's a bad look all around. So hopefully that can be resolved.
I agree 100%. All right. Cam and I were down at Mattamy Athletic Center, and we've done this, Cameron, 3 times now, including this year, I believe. And
I think so. We had a couple of years of, COVID going on. So it's been a couple of years. But yeah, it's probably been about 3 times we've done this.
Yeah. And so we had the opportunity to be part of the gold and bronze medal game. And also Friday, there was a women's game, which I want to get Claire's thoughts on that in a second, because she did a phenomenal job on that as well. But Cameron, the bronze and gold medal games, thoughts kind of going into the day, which for us is normally a weekend, but it ended up being a one-day Champions Day, if you will. And that's what we did.
Yeah, like, you know, like, I had a lot of nervousness or anxiety going into the day, because it's been a couple of years since I've done this, let alone, you know, going to the old Maple Leaf Gardens, which is now the Mattamy Center. And yeah, like, not seeing some of people from AMI for 2 years. So yeah, I was certainly nervous. I didn't know what to expect, because usually we did the, you know, in between periods panel and before and after game. And I wasn't quite sure what we were going to do this year. So yeah, like, it was kind of all of the nervousness and excitement all coming up all together at once. And as always, it was really great to be back and talking about, blind hockey. With the bronze medal game, it was the Eclipse against the Hibou, and it ended up being 8-3. But I don't really think that the score reflected how close it was at the beginning, because it was very close at the beginning. But then, the Eclipse ended up pulling away. So, that was a really good bronze medal game. It was kind of competitive and at the beginning. And then, like I said, the Eclipse pulled away. And then the gold medal game ended up coming through. And that gold medal game, it was phenomenal. That's what hockey's all about at the end of the day. With the Ice Owls coming out in overtime, and arguably the best player in blind hockey being Jason Juha, or as our colleague through AMI, or I guess through Parasport TV, Nico Cardarelli, would say, Jason, you ha-ha. And he ended up scoring the overtime winner. It was just so exciting to just to see hockey again. And it was a close game. And yeah, like it was just, it was so great to be back and watching blind hockey after 2 years. And yeah, it was an exciting gold medal game.
Yeah, I really would agree with you. Jason Juha really, really is the top of the field in blind hockey, and the offense kind of feeds through him as well. But I wanted to go back because this is something cool that I can relate to. I want to go back to the bronze medal game and James Ruddle and Curtis Ruddle, who were a father-son duo, and this is the first time they've had that at that event. And I think it's cool to kind of, you know, if both, you know, family members are athletic, to be able to share that. I just liked it, and I think that you know, that's a good thing. I also want to shout out Nathan Tree, who unfortunately came from the UK and posted on social media the other day and said, I have COVID, so we wish him the best of luck in recovery. But really great event overall. And I don't know about you, Cameron, but I was really hoping for a shootout in that last gold medal game. Like that would have just...
not a goalie.
maybe not. And that's maybe why
you're asking a goalie this question.
And that's maybe why Cameron might not have agreed with me on site when I said it, but you know, I was a proponent of doing that. And but
you know, Jason, Brock, just, I think at the end of the day, like you want to end up settling it being a team sport. So you want the entire team to be a part of that process in order to win. With a shootout, you know, it's just an individual player going in, and it ends up being, you know, who's the best at doing the shootout and doing the tricks to be able to get the goal in the net. So I'm happy that the way it ended. And to me, it's like poetry in motion that Jason Juha, arguably the best player in Canadian blind hockey, ended up getting the winner.
And there goes a goalie being so diplomatic about a shootout. Love it. No, it was good. And it was almost poetic to kind of seeing how it is. And everybody had Jason Juha having his hand in that gold medal game. Again, shout out to Joey Cabral, who is a national team goaltender. And for what those guys have to go through, not having very much sight at all and having pucks peppered at them, the saves that those goaltenders were making all day over and over again. I know Cam and Josh, you guys make these saves on a regular basis, but it's just it's amazing to see them just be stonewall and be there and be in charge. So that's a little bit about the Blind Hockey Champions Day. However, before we wrap this segment up, I would be remiss if I did not talk about the Friday broadcast, which had 30 women competing in a game. It was a wonderful thing to watch. And our very own Claire Buchanan did her first time color commentary and did a wonderful job. Claire, in such a busy weekend, how was that Friday experience for you?
I mean, that's one way to start off a weekend. It being my first time, I was excited, and to experience, that was my first time experiencing blind hockey live in person as well. I've interviewed a few athletes and I've watched games on YouTube, but to be there in the presence of the sport itself, the sounds that it brings, it's definitely a different game of hockey. And to be there witnessing it all and witnessing history with it being the first women's game. And like you said, 30 women, ages from as young as 12 playing in that game to in their 40s or 50s. It's incredible to see not only that many women come together for a first time event like that, but also we've just been through a pandemic and we're still dealing with a pandemic, but we just went 2 years without having this happen. And to put this together, through all that and have all of these women come together, Natalie Spooner, their ambassador, being there, it was just incredible to witness.
Yeah, I agree. And I may be a little bit jealous that you got to interview Natalie Spooner, but it was a great interview nonetheless. And it was good to see you there. And I, you know, from someone who's part of the National Women's Para Ice Hockey Program, you know, to be part of that and to be kind of standing behind and championing that, it was good to watch and a good way to kick off that weekend. And I hope to have all of you around the table next year, live and in person around the blind hockey event. It's a great great weekend. And and Asha, can we not schedule Champions Day on that weekend? If anyone's listening, that would be so great, because I'd love to have all my co-hosts and with me. But I'll send you a little treat if you're listening to the show to make sure we don't schedule it when I post it when it does come out for next year. Yeah, that puts a wrap on what we were doing this past weekend, and it was fun. And we hope you enjoyed the conversation we just had and letting in on our para sports experience and what we got to do first times. And it was just a lot of fun. So we hope you enjoyed. And with that, we're going to take a break here on the Neutral Zone. And sadly, as Josh mentioned, Eugene Melnyk has passed away. And we're going to talk about his legacy and what that might be moving forward today and beyond, and some of the highlights of his career and a little bit of the lowlights, because there were certainly some of those. We'll be back. Stay with us.
If you want to leave a message for the Neutral Zone, call now, 1-866-509-4545. And don't forget to give us permission to use your message on the air. Let's get ready to leave a voicemail!
Just for the audience that doesn't listen during our back channel, before Cameron exited stage left, he said, have a good day, and thanks, Claire, for calling me old, and left and dipped away. So that old remark is still sitting salty a little bit with one Cam Jenkins, even 37 minutes into the program. Welcome back to the program. I'm alongside Josh Watson and Claire Buchanan. As we mentioned in our headlines, former Ottawa Senators owner Eugene Melnyk has passed away earlier this week with an ongoing battle with illness. What was your reaction to this when you first heard this? Let's start with Josh.
I think whenever someone of prominence passes away, there's always a bit of shock to it. He certainly had stepped out of the limelight quite a bit after the outdoor game that took place in 2017. However, he was somewhat of a polarizing figure. On the one hand, he's going to be celebrated for keeping the Senators in Ottawa, because who knows where they would be right now if he hadn't. But then at the same time, there will also be those fans who will be critical, because as time went on, he started to become more and more critical of the people of Ottawa and their support of his team. It will be very interesting to see how his legacy does shake out in the end.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, he showed his legacy through his loyalty to the city. Yes, the fans, at the end of the day, the fans want to see their team and their city be as successful as possible. And when it comes to that, like, Ottawa hasn't really been in the fight for a Stanley Cup. The fact is, he kept that team in the city of Ottawa and gave the people of Ottawa a team to still cheer for. And I think at the end of the day that you have to be thankful for that, no matter how successful your seasons have been.
I think for me, what stands out when you look at Eugene Melnyk was, yes, he took over the Senators in 2006. And he was that figure that, like, oh, you saved us. You saved us. You know, this is, you can do no wrong in the beginning. They went to a conference final either that same season or the season after, very close to when he took over the ownership. I think where the sourness sort of came to light was when, as Josh alluded, he made those comments outside of the outdoor game and said, if it's not here, it will be somewhere else that the team will be located. And let me tell you, the fans spoke loud and clear after that comment was made. And they had one of the lowest attendance rates in all of the National Hockey League for a long time. And then he was also that polarized figure who said, you know, that he was part of it, who said, you know, the rebuild is done. And I know it was the GM that said it, but he is still behind that. And then they went out and didn't do so well after those comments were made. So my question, and kind of where I kind of look and think, okay, what do we do with, you know, what Eugene Melnyk has accomplished? Was it a success as an owner, Claire? Or can we determine that yet, given that his death was not too long ago?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He passed away. Yeah, he was sick and he passed away sooner than I guess we all wanted him to or expected. And it'll be interesting to see where the organization goes from here and kind of who the torch is passed down to and what kind of mindset that individual has. And you see hockey teams with successful track records and stuff, and it's built around a certain mindset and kind of championship culture. And it'll be very interesting to see if they carry on the legacy or if they kind of switch gears into a different mindset moving forward.
Yeah, he was somewhat unique in the pantheon of ownership of hockey teams or sports teams in general, if you will, because he was a fan first. He loved the Senators, and as far as I understand, that was his reasoning for buying the team and keeping them in Ottawa, was he was a fan. Having said that, I think once the experience of owning a team and dealing with revenue and all the rest of it came in, I think that's when you saw the Eugene, the businessman, come out. And at some point, he soured a lot of fans as a result of that, just because he started to say, well, if this city doesn't support this team, then something's going to happen, basically.
Right. And it is, it's a tough conversation to have happen. And I mean, you know, you look at when something like this happens, when an owner is no longer an owner, and in this case it was by, you know, tragic and unfortunate death, you look at the rest of the organization and you say, okay, that was our pillar. That was the guy that supported all of what we were doing, whether right, wrong, or indifferent. And so Pierre Dorion is looking at this going, okay, now what? My boss is gone by death, and it's really sad, and he's grieving that process. But also, as a human being, he's going to be looking going, okay, am I still going to be the GM of this team? Who's my next boss? Where do we go from here? So it's that really difficult balance. I would assume I'm calling my friend, my boss, and all of those things. I mean, I can relate it to this program. We have been very, very supported by Andy Frank and the network. and he is our boss. And I myself have a close enough relationship where, you know, if there's something going on, I reach out to him and say, hey, boss, this is what's going on. What can we do? But if something were to happen to Andy, whether it's this or something else, we would all wonder what's the future of what we're doing as a network. So I can understand where that may be kind of a bit of a thing, you know, for Pierre. But at the same time, he doesn't want to look like a jerk and say, well, I got to think for myself, because the man passed away in an illness that everyone knew, but not necessarily expected, Claire.
Exactly. And it's unexpected. And like, what do you do in those situations where it's kind of, maybe they had the conversations. We don't know what goes on behind closed doors. How long has he known that he's been sick, and or even if it was this bad? And where have those conversations gone to? Where do we pick up from here? And what if, I wonder what conversations they had with him before passing of what he would want moving forward with the organization. To show his loyalty has shown through, and I'm hopeful that he gets that in return.
To me, you owe that to Eugene. You owe that to the guy who's
exactly
indebted so much time to this city, to this organization. You owe that to have those behind the scenes conversations, which we will only know what those behind the scenes conversations in the sense of what happens moving forward. But no one's going to come out and say, yeah, this is what Eugene told me to do. Everyone's going to just see what takes shape with this organization. But Josh, I'm sure you agree, you owe this to Eugene Melnyk, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I think as team, you move forward and you just focus on what you can focus on, and you let the ownership settle itself out as it will once everything is settled. There's a probate process and everything that has to go on. And I mean, as him being a fan of the team, you strive to bring his vision to light. And we can complain about all of the cuts and everything that he has made to the team in recent years, but I really believe that at the end, he still wanted a successful team. And so that's all you can do is be young, be hungry, and try to win.
If you don't want a team to be successful, and that's not your end goal as an owner, you probably shouldn't own a professional sports team if that's not what your goal is. So I agree with you, Josh. I think 100% that was his goal, and you deserve to take on the legacy and move on with the torch with Eugene Melnyk. Whether you agree, disagree with some of his fundamentals, it doesn't matter. You deserve that moving on piece and moving on with what you believe as an organization Eugene Melnyk would have wanted because of all the time he gave to the organization. So with that, I want to extend my condolences on behalf of everyone from the Neutral Zone with the Ottawa Senators organization, the family, the friends, anyone that knows Eugene Melnyk. He will be missed. And the hockey community is has a hole without Eugene Melnyk, whether you agree with his fundamentals or you don't. Coming up next, we're going to continue the conversation. Stay with us. Last minute conversations before we come back from the break. And always fun on the Neutral Zone, as you never know what we do get up to chatting about on the program and on the back channel. And thought we've had a great show thus far, and we've got one last segment to bring your way. And this is one we didn't get to last week, and that is some rules that will take effect in this year's baseball season, which will begin next Friday. And I have it on really good authority to tell you that we're going to have Ari Shapiro next week to break down the season and what's going to be going on with the Toronto Blue Jays and everywhere else. So you will get your full dose of Major League Baseball next week as well. But let's go over some of the rules. The Shohei Ohtani rule, which is exactly how it has been phrased on all social media platforms. This is that if a designated hitter is pitching, you can remain in the game as the hitter once you get removed. And so that is totally to help Shohei Ohtani show off his offensive skills, even though he may be pulled out as a starting pitcher. 28-man roster till at least May the 1st. So that'll be for about 3 weeks' time. This is one that I'm a big proponent of, especially with the shortened spring training. And the shortened spring training is something that I really want to see continue. I think a whole month and a half of games is just too many, you know, but we'll see what happens. But I'm big on the whole lengthening the roster even by 3 from the normal amount. I'm going to take a word out of one Josh Watson, who said to me, what in the heck is a ghost runner? And a ghost runner is going to be implemented this year as it was last year with starting extra innings. And that means that that runner will start on second base beginning of the 10th inning and beyond. This is just to help speed up the game. Let's see. So these are the rules that we know are to be in effect this season. Which one of these, Josh, do you like, dislike? And then we'll move straight over to Claire from there.
I think I like the Ohtani rule. I think it was a rule that had to be put in because Ohtani is a rare entity in baseball in that he pitches as a starting pitcher and he also hits. And especially now that we've gone to a universal DH, which is something that you haven't mentioned yet, I think this rule is absolutely necessary because if he only lasts, say, 3 innings as a pitcher, that doesn't necessarily mean that his capabilities should be removed from a game. So that one intrigues me the most, and I think that that one's the best rule that's come out. I don't like the use of the ghost runner. Call me old-fashioned, call me old, whatever you want. I feel like if
we already have called you old on this episode, we're good, so we don't have to do
it again. I know. I'm trying to get a thought out here, Brock. Jeez. I don't like the ghost runner rule, at least not in the 10th inning. Give the teams a chance to win the normal way, quote unquote. And then, you know, if you get to a 12th inning, okay, then maybe. But I still would prefer to see the game played the way it's always been played.
You know what? I think I'm done calling people old for today. I like that they are lengthening the squad for spring training. That in itself is going to make guys work harder for spots, and it's just going to make the game better overall. People are going to work harder for those spots, and more people are going to get more opportunities to fight for those spots. And to also keep in pitchers to be able to hit after they're done pitching, again, that's going to make the generations following these athletes work on other skills and make them better all-around baseball players. Moving forward, you're just going to see better baseball and stronger athletes and more diverse in their skills.
I think what this showcases is that if you are, you know, good enough to hit and productive, then you deserve to stay in the game. But if you're a pitcher and you're just not meant to do anything but pitch, which I'm totally okay with, you don't have to hit in the National League. We can get rid of that, because when you have a high-level pitcher who does his craft with pitching, and God forbid, you know, they breaks his finger by a ball coming in at 90-plus miles an hour, that's not good. But if you are good enough to hit and pitch, by all means, play the game and do your thing. Because watching Shohei Ohtani is unbelievable, and if you haven't done it, you best do it now, because it is something to behold. That is the end of our show for this week. I would like to thank Josh Watson, Claire Buchanan, Cam Jenkins. I'd also like to thank our technical producer, Matt Agnew. Our technical supervisor is Paula Deneen, and our manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. Tune in next week, because you just never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Be well, be safe, and we'll talk to you next week.